When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering the national debut of a film that has deep ties to Kingston.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
A Canadian sci-fi thriller filmed entirely in Kingston is reaching audiences across the country. A milestone moment for the city's film industry and a sign of what local production can achieve. Den Mother Crimson premiered nationally on Canadian broadcaster Hollywood Suite on January 27th. The film was shot end-to-end in Kingston by local production company Branded to Film and marks the first locally produced feature at this scale to receive a nationwide broadcast release. The project first debuted at the Kingston Canadian Film Festival in 2023 before gaining international attention as an official selection at the Frontiers Buyers Market at the Cannes Marché du Film. Writer and Branded to Film co-founder Jay Jolly spoke with CFRC about the company's first large-scale production and what it proved possible.
Our whole thing was to build Kingston's first long-form narrative production house. And we needed that first movie from a local production house. So our goal was, can we do that first $1 million end-to-end production? And our benchmark was, of course, we want to make a fun story and a quality story that, you know, could appeal to a global audience and compete at that kind of level. But really, the heart of this was we really wanted to show that, A, it was possible to do an end-to-end production. B, we had a benchmark of hiring 60% locals, and we hit that benchmark. And C, that we could gather enough people around from other parts of the industry. So it was really great. Not only was it the first production at that level end-to-end ever done here, you know, when we saw what it could do, like Hollywood Suites, for instance, who is a partner of our company, who is premiering this on their network. David Kine, the CEO, and one of their board members, Richard Sturzberg, are huge supporters of what we're doing here in Kingston. They see the benefit of Kingston being that new, affordable production hub for especially independent Canadian producers that are increasingly getting priced out of the Greater Toronto area, and just increasing the potential of Ontario to, you know, be able to cater to more, because we were starting to see independent producers like myself starting to leave the province and shoot in other provinces to find more of that, more affordability.
Den Mother Crimson is the feature directorial debut of Cilic Sasanese, a veteran assistant director whose credits include Pacific Rim, Resident Evil, and Hairspray. The film stars Canadian stars Daniel Cash, Anouka Okuma, Sarah Mitich, and Saad Siddiqui, and tells the story of three AI experts enlisted as consultants on a secretive AI project whose consequences soon take a terrifying turn.
The story came from another writer, and it was actually a horror movie, and it was set in a kind of a very different paradigm, which was, a psychological kind of more a mental hospital. And we just realized that, you know, a very timely thing, again, this was like 2022 when we were developing it. And then we, we just real, you know, AI was already on people's lips, and we realized that the story could be just shifted just a little bit. And for our needs, we were also looking, you know, a lot that had to do with the script was also making it more of a potboiler, which potboiler means it's like characters in a room with not too many other, it's like one location and creating all the intensity in the drama. And, you know, the subject of AI and the implications and the ethics and morality around it just seemed to lend itself really naturally to, again, this kind of like a speculative fiction of this this facility where the AI that's supposed to take care of this facility all of a sudden goes a bit rogue, and you know, what that means and for all of those involved.
While the story unfolds largely within a single location, the impact of the production extends far beyond the screen. The film's success helped demonstrate Kingston's viability as a production hub, with more local films and a studio on the horizon. For Kingston's film community, it represents more than a premiere. It's proof of concept and a turning point.
Hollywood Suites, it's, you know, it's going out on cable and then also through their app and stuff like that. Well, for that, it's just, you know, it'll be a bit more of a spotlight on what we're doing. And again, it sets another benchmark and another first for Kingston and what's possible here. I think what it showed is potential. And now what we're seeing now that we've done a second film, now that we're building a studio, is that we're really getting to what I believe is Kingston will be that next great production center for independent production in Ontario.
Once again, Den Mother Crimson is now available to watch nationally on Canadian broadcaster Hollywood Suite, and Branded to Film doesn't plan on slowing down anytime soon.
So what we're hoping is if you interview me next year at this time, that we've done about three or four movies, maybe one of our own and maybe two or three from somebody else that we're starting to bring here to shoot here instead of other jurisdictions.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, that covers a special ice rescue training session near Gananoque.
Thank you, Jesse. Residents north of Gananoque may have noticed an increased presence of emergency vehicles and firefighters along the river near Turnaround Road and County Road 32 on February 1st as crews carried out ice water rescue training exercises. The training took place near the CN train overpass involving the Leeds and Thousand Islands Fire Service and was part of ongoing preparedness efforts for cold water and ice-related emergencies. Fire officials said the exercises are designed to ensure firefighters are equipped to respond quickly and safely to incidents involving people or vehicles breaking through ice. Ice water rescues present significant dangers to both victims and responders, making regular training essential. Members of the public were permitted to observe the exercises, but were asked to remain a safe distance away and avoid interfering with operations for safety reasons. Fire officials said continued training helps ensure crews are ready to respond effectively during emergencies and enhances public safety across the region during the winter season. The Leeds and Thousand Islands Fire Service has taken delivery of a new Halmatro Omnishore vehicle and structural shoring kit, enhancing its ability to stabilize vehicles, buildings, and other hazards during emergency incidents. Fire officials say the specialized kit will strengthen the department's rescue and stabilization capabilities, helping crews operate more safely and effectively during complex emergencies. The equipment was purchased with support from 1200 Degrees Ontario, with Jason Carroll, John Blackburn, and Omnishore specialist Ruben Markhook assisting with the procurement, delivery, and training process. The new shoring system allows firefighters quickly to secure unstable vehicles, collapsed structures, and other dangerous scenes, reducing risk to both responders and the public. Officials say the investment will improve response times and outcomes in rescue scenarios, further strengthening emergency preparedness for residents in the township and surrounding communities. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LGI reporter for YGK News Owen Fullerton about South Frontenac Council's decision to vote against a proposed high-speed railway.
Thank you, Dinah. The township of South Frontenac has become the first municipality to officially and unanimously vote against being included in a high-speed rail line corridor between Quebec City and Toronto. One of the recently released potential route options that Alto, the Crown corporation responsible for the rail line, would see the trains corridor passing directly through South Frontenac Township, which landowners and environmentalists in the area have said is an unsuitable plan. South Frontenac's council stood behind those concerns, voting unanimously in favor of a motion to reject Aalto's projected Southern Ontario corridor, saying instead that it makes more sense to route a train within the boundaries of the city of Kingston. South Frontenac Township Mayor Ron Vandewall says, well, he worried that Kingston's own mayor, Brian Patterson, would push for support of Aalto's southern proposal. The two are aligned. The motion was moved to the top of last Tuesday night's agenda, with mostly negative feedback being heard from constituents who said it would disrupt their rural community and natural environment. The Frontenac Arch Biosphere Network said they too have fielded a bevy of concerns around a potential impact to the UNESCO-protected site. Additionally, Mayor Vandewall says the southern option would limit access to the main roads and break up land for some individuals. Vandewall said that he was told by Kingston's Brian Patterson that unless a corridor would service Kingston with a stop in the area, then they too are not interested in supporting the proposal, and a motion planned to go in front of council at an upcoming meeting will say exactly that. As of now, while Aalto's southern option would bring the train's path closer to Kingston, there is no option that would see a stop in Kingston, with stops planned for Ottawa, Peterborough, and Toronto. Currently, people in Kingston seeking rail service can choose between options with Via Rail. However, some services offered in the region by the company have been in jeopardy recently. According to an email sent to a constituent from Lanark Frontenac MP Scott Reed, high-speed rail options will lead to lower Via Rail ridership and inevitably cuts to the service through Kingston and other towns in southeastern Ontario. Aalto says the services of Via Rail will be eventually integrated with the high-speed rail line, and the creation of such, quote, offers the opportunity to improve services on these existing railroads so as to better address local needs. The Crown Corporation says of the two options proposed for the corridor, the northern route would provide a more direct trip with lower travel time, but required work in remote and sensitive areas, while the southern option provides more simplified construction and operations. Aalto will be in South Frontenac hosting a public information session at the Storrington Lions Club on February 18th. Mayor Vandewall said he told Aalto representatives that the information session is, quote, a little late and expects no change in community perspective on the proposal.
And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that story. Now over to the LJR reporter for CJAI-FM, Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about the Napanee Health Unit.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
The Southeast Health Unit office in Napanee will be continuing its lease in a smaller capacity at a lesser rate. Originally, they were going to close at the end of March. The health unit has now agreed to reduce their footprint within the building by approximately 75%. As their lease agreement is based on square footage occupied, this has reduced their rent from approximately $1,825 to $430 for the final 20 months of the agreement term. The town's clerk, Jessica Walters, explains why staff believe this is in the best interest for the community.
In short, the health unit is now, they had initially given us a notice of termination effective March 31st. The budget was presented on the assumption that they would no longer be in there after that date. They have subsequently submitted a request to continue their lease, but on amended terms with a reduced footprint in the building and therefore a reduced cost. Staff believe this is in the best interest of the community because it would let us maintain the vaccine clinics and the fridge for well water testing. And any other services they might wish to offer there through that office space.
CAO Matthew Grant explains the reduction in space and why he supports them staying open.
Myself, Mr. Brown, and Ms. Walters met with the public health team. And so it does represent a significantly reduced footprint within the building. It's essentially a room to keep the vaccines as well as the front reception area. And as a building tenant, it still allows them access to the large meeting space to run vaccine clinics. I'm quite supportive of it. I do know that the public health unit has had some challenges to navigate since they've merged the different units. into one single unit. As they're looking to reduce cost wherever they can, this was a way they felt they could do that, while still maintaining service to the community. Generally this results in people not having to travel to Kingston for vaccines. And I think that's where the win is, for residents.
Councillor Bill Martin expressed a concern he had about neighboring communities using the service.
I think we have to do it just to maintain the services to our residents, but it concerns me that we're always asked to pay for a service for other communities, because this is going to be used by more than just Napanee residents. It's going to be, you know, it's Kingston, Frontenac, LNA, Prince Edward County, you know. So I'm concerned about that part of it, actually, that we're paying, our taxpayers are paying for a service for other communities. But like I said, I don't want our residents to lose any services either.
Grant noted the benefits and said they wouldn't be paying for other municipalities.
I don't know that we're necessarily paying us for other municipalities. I think the benefit is maintenance of vaccine clinics here, which will primarily be for our residents. I would say the only benefit other municipalities may be getting is that the vaccine supply chain in this immediate area of 41 and the like will come through Napanee. But I don't anticipate that other municipalities will be getting a direct benefit from the use of our space other than that.
Mayor Terry Richardson showed his support for the health unit staying open, but noted a concern as well.
I'm hopeful that our staff aren't going to do any more than what they're doing now. Obviously, the concern is if it's not staffed 5 days a week, there's a possibility there, but I'm sure Mr. Grant and the senior leadership team will be monitoring that fairly closely. So, and it's a little bit refreshing in the fact that the health unit has now realized that it's important to have a brick and mortar type of facility within our community, that you just cannot do it remotely.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about the County Food Hub.
In 2017, the rural schools of Prince Edward County were reassessed, resulting in closures and amalgamations. The Sophiasburg School was on the chopping block, but local residents said no. They came together with an idea to create a shared commercial kitchen and called it the County Food Hub. It is used by entrepreneurs, community programs, and partnerships with projects ranging from food business incubation to school lunch programs and community meals, all strengthening local food access and economic development. Recipe for Success is a free entrepreneurship training program aimed at helping people turn food ideas into real sustainable businesses. The Food Hub Executive Director, Melissa Tran, tells us more. So what's new?
So we are incredibly excited to talk about a program called Recipe for Success. So in the years that we have been here, what we are seeing is people with lots of passion and desire, and they've got a recipe. So if it's their Nona's tomato sauce or their grandma's muffins or whatever it is, they have something they're passionate about making, but they don't necessarily have business experience. And so they come in and they want to make something, but there's a lot of regulations and rules around food and labeling and packaging. And so what this program is a 7-week entrepreneurial training program for anybody who's interested in starting a food business.
And when does that start?
So right now applications are open, and the program itself will start on March 22nd with a welcome event. And then for 7 Mondays after that, we've got, it's 15 total modules we've squished into those 7 days. So we start with Business 101. When do you get an HST number? Because not all food has tax on it. So, you know, when do you need to do that? Should you be incorporated, not incorporated? How do you write a business plan? Because if you want to go to get funding from a bank or Community Futures or any of those types of programs, you have to have a solid business plan. So we start right with Business 101, how to keep your food and your customers safe. We talk about packaging and nutrition labels and regulations that are around that. We talk about being able to get your product ready for retail. How do you get into stores? Working with distributors, looking at your recipes, scaling it up, process efficiencies, And then we also talk about the hospitality side of the food industry, as well as branding, marketing, social media. We live in a very touristy area, so we have a workshop just on culinary tourism in the area. And then we end it with a photographer and a food stylist showing you how to be able to take better pictures of your product, because we live in a world where social media is everything. You have to have a social media account or people aren't going to know about you. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Did you recently get a grant or some money to help you with this? Or
we did. Yes. Yeah. So it is primarily sponsored through the Agriculture Workforce Equity and Diversity Initiative, which provides funding to organizations to support underrepresented groups that are starting or growing a food business in Canada. So this project is partly funded by the Government of Canada and Ontario under the Sustainable Canadian Agriculture Partnership. And then we've also partnered with the County of Prince Edward Economic Development Office. And so if you haven't dealt with them, they help strengthen local food businesses and all other businesses. They're there to invest in the long-term economic resilience across our community.
You must have a team of people to teach these things.
We do, yeah. So each one of those modules has a different instructor in it. Yeah. So whoever the expert is in that field will come in. So all of these classes are offered in person. Some of them will happen in our kitchen here if it's a food-based class. And then if it's a little bit more just educational or training, then we'll be in one of the town halls. The idea grew over time, and the ideas for the workshops grew over time. We ran a couple focus groups back at the beginning of 2024. Time is starting to run together. Where we brought in people who were in food businesses, and they had talked about things that would have been helpful to them as they were starting. So that inspired some of it. And then I just get a number of people who come in the door and say, you know, I have this idea to make ice cream cakes or to start some sort of food business. How do I start? So we're hoping if we combine all of this together and we can offer it at no cost, that people will be able to find time in their schedule and interest. And yeah, the first time you're running something, you're never really sure how many people are we going to have 50 people sign up or 5 people? We have room for 15. So we're hoping...
Right.
We're hoping to fill it.
And how do people apply?
So on the County Food Hub website, there is a link that says Recipe for Success, and it's a very simple Google form to fill out.
Fantastic. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I just looked at, so the cutoff date for applying is February 13th. So it's coming up. And then our team will look at the applications and we'll let everybody know by February 20th. So there's lots of time to make arrangements for the classes.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about Black History Month celebrations in Northumberland County.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones with CFWN in Cobourg, Ontario. Black History Month is in full swing in Northumberland County with the raising of the Pan-African flag in Cobourg and Port Hope. But for Angela Grogan, this month is about learning more of the rich contributions Black people have made to the area.
For me, Black history is a time of reflection, learning and recognition of a history that I knew little about. It is a time to honor the history, contributions, resilience, and leadership of Black communities across Canada, and also right here in our local community of Northumberland County.
So then how do you honor that?
We honor it in many ways. It began in 2024 when I realized there was no official recognition of Black History Month in our county, and I wouldn't even go, and it might be anywhere east of here. I started off by petitioning to the municipality of Port Hope to proclaim February as Black History Month in our municipality and to raise the Pan-African flag as a symbol. Then in 2025, I extended that same petition to the county of Northumberland, and again, this year, to the town of Cobourg. I must say, even though it might sound commendable. I don't think it should have been based on advocacy for this recognition to be given, because we have a history of early settlers in our county that has been either erased or buried in the archives. And I am not sure if our listeners are following me on my 28-day series. I take pride in knowing that I dedicated almost close to 6 months in researching Northumberland County's history that has excluded Black people.
Angela, give us some of the history that you've researched about prominent Black people in the county.
If you look at my first series on day one, I looked at the pioneer people and the first settlers that came to Northumberland via the railroad, freedom fighters. They came with a number of different reasons, just like how other immigrants have come to Canada. So if we look at day one, I'm pulling it up because that's who I am, pulling back up my notes. If we look at day one, we will see that there's a number of prominent families who came here and are still living here. And their names could sometimes be recognized by people in the community. And I'm not saying they're directly related, but I'm just saying that, yes, we see that the history of Black history is rooted in Northumberland County. And I use that also as a theme of my Black History Month presentations. So when we look at local historical research documents, you had families such as the Huffmans, Longsberry, and Hornback families living in and around Cobourg, Port Hope, Bewdley, and Hamilton townships. These families were not just passing through. They were rooted. It is stated that the Longsberry family settled near Harwood, and some Black settlers in the northern, and some of them were farmers. The Huffmans live in the Hamilton township, and some of their family members are buried in Bewdley Union Cemetery. The records also list early Black individuals connected to Port Hope, including Edward Berry. These facts are real, and they're woven into our shared history. And I take great pride in this one because I moved to Port Hope about 13 years ago, and one of my good friends always teased me, you would never be long because you would need 3 generations of family buried in the local cemetery. So when I was doing my research and I discovered all this, I thought, here you are, I do belong, even though they're not my family.
How does it make you feel, though, that this is now getting out?
Well, I think it's now getting out because I took the deliberate, I won't say ownership because I don't own it, but I used some of the experiences that I encountered in the county and in my town to investigate, to find out why is it that people believe that Black people doesn't, or our new immigrants, or new migrants coming in from Toronto and other cities to Port Hope and to Northumberland County. Because if you look back, the records also stated that there was a William Waddell, and he established a barbershop in Cobourg called the Cobourg Bath before 1848. And it described him as a Black entrepreneur. Then they give detailed records of ownership of the Albert House and the concert rooms on King Street East in Port Hope. So when history is not fully told, it's shaped who is seen as belonging and why their stories do not matter.
Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up on the corridor, supported by local realtor Kim Purcell at kimpurcell.ca, is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, February 12th, daytime high of -2, actually feeling slightly warmer at -1 with sunny conditions, dropping down to -16 overnight. Friday, February 13th, daytime high of -5, actually feeling right around 0 in the sunshine. Saturday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, daytime high of -2, feeling closer to -11, so if you've got somebody to snuggle up with, keep them warm. Sunday, February 15th, daytime high of -3, going to feel closer to -11. And then starting off next week, Monday, February 16th, daytime high of 1, but we've got cloudy and cool conditions. It's actually going to feel closer to -6 when all is said and done.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via cfrc.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.